When the shift boss hits that button, then you'd better look alive, 'cause the lumber comes a-rolling like the bees out of a hive. And you'll feel that sweat come pouring as each muscle screams with pain. And you'll wonder if it's worth it working on the long green chain.
Hi, I'm Mark Laren Young, and thanks for checking out the Green Chain Podcast. For almost 20 years, the Beachcombers defined the way the world saw British Columbia. And as Constable John Constable, actor Jackson Davies was a big part of that myth-making. I met Jackson in Vancouver to talk about the Beachcombers, BC's image, and how Canada's forest and film industries face some of the exact same problems with Canadian content.
There's a theme here, huh?
There is a theme here. I want to talk to you. Well, the theme is forests, and I thought the Beachcombers has really defined how people in BC and around the world see the province, see the trees, see our forests.
It's a great story. I was in Los Angeles, and I was showing, someone asked about Beachcombers, so I had a clip or two. I showed it to them. You know, it's the proverbial shot, the Persephone heading out of the harbor. There's the Keats Island, there's the blue skies, there's the mountains in the background with the snow, and this guy from LA said, "How do you guys do that?" And then you think, I don't think there's another show that has that background. I mean, the ocean, the mountains, the green. I mean, it's all there. And the neat thing is, it's still there. You know, I mean, I was having a discussion the other day about that too. Someone said, "Well, isn't it shows like Beachcombers a little dated?" I said, "Well, no. I mean, the things that made it work." You know, people working on the water, people working in the industry, you know, in the forestry, whatever, forest fires, First Nations. I mean, we covered those. It is still relevant today. I mean, there's one show that we had the 35th anniversary in the summer up at Gibson's. And we had a show about, there was some construction, there was some logging in, and it was affecting a salmon stream. So here's Chief Dan George doing his thing. This was 78. And it's still happening there right now. So I don't know whether that's good or bad, but yeah, it is the view of not only Canadians but the world. We're talking 60 different countries.
Well, I remember hearing once when I was in the Caribou and saw all these German tourists that they were there because they'd fallen in love with BC watching the Beachcombers.
It ran longer in Germany than it did Canada. Whether they're urban myths or not, but there's all stories about people they get long distance call, the realtors from Germany, and someone wanting to buy a piece of property as long as it overlooked Molly Reach and that little inlet there. Yeah, no, it was quite popular. Australia, Germany, show again. It ran longer in those two countries than it did in Canada.
Now, you weren't there the very first year of Beachcombers, were you?
No, I came in I was there 16 out of the 19 years, so I was there year three.
Okay. See, I vaguely remember you joining as a kid.
Well,
I remember I'm dating myself too, but yeah, I remember you being the new character of Beachcombers.
Yeah, that's right. I actually didn't even have a name. It was the second constable. Yes, that's right. Yeah, and you soon learn that as an actor. You never leave that on your resume or anything. You give yourself a character, because if someone shows me a resume and it says, guard number three, I know it wasn't that big a part.
So you went from second constable to constable squared?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, constable. Yeah, well, there was another actor, Terry Kelly, who's a great actor, and we didn't have names. He was constable one, I was constable two. So I thought, well, constable. So I said, okay, let's go with that. And then we gave ourselves a name. I'll call myself John Constable, and he was Connie Constable.
Okay.
I don't know. We had to amuse ourselves. It was long days on the set.
Very cool. Any particular memories of sort of working with trees, working around?
Oh, yeah. The neat thing was, I mean, there was a lot of episodes that had to deal with logging. There was one really interesting episode directed by Charles Wilkinson, who's a good local director, good director, about this guy needed, the family was in trouble, they didn't have any money, and basically started fires. The old proverbial thing that people would start fires in order to get a job fighting fires. And it happens a lot. I didn't realize that, but it does happen a lot. And that was an interesting episode showing not only the obvious, the mistake about it and how he was wrecking an industry, but very subtle for a beachcomber, showing that, this guy, you know, it wasn't just a guy going out, you know, smoking dope in the woods. It was a guy that purposely said it so he would get a job. So we got into a kind of a period there. We would do shows like that. We do a lot of shows, obviously, about the industry, the logging industry, because it was big up there, you know. And that's how basically the Persephone, you know, would make money in getting those logs that went away from the booms, you know. That's how he basically would make the money. And it was a different time. Even at that time, the beachcombing laws were different, you know. When we went from this guy that for $5... you could have a license. That's all it cost you. $5 and you could go out and make a living on the water, basically dealing with timber that broke away from the boom.
Actually, please, because it just occurred to me, some people may not realize this, explain what beachcombing is.
Well, yeah, beachcombing in this particular case, these guys were log salvage, log salvage license. They'd paint that on the side of the boat. What they would do is they'd go out there, and after a storm or something, or maybe a boom, which means that tugboats would pull all these huge logs, big booms of logs, to the sawmills. And if some of them broke away, they'd float out there, and they were fair game. You could pick them up and sell them back to the either to the boom operators, or actually even to the sawmills. You could do anything you want with them. It was a kind of a bit of that law of the sea, you know, where if it's abandoned, it's yours. So that's basically was the premise of the show. This guy made his living out there with his First Nations partner, and they would go out and try to find it, and they had the slow Persephone, the slow boat, and of course everyone loved Relic, who had the fast jet boat, who would go and grab again, take these logs and assemble them. Now the neat thing is, or I don't know, it's probably not neat, the whole idea is, that's all changed. These guys can't even do this anymore. Conglomerates have got together and have taken over that from the industry. We were on the water a lot. Near the end, we tried to get off the water and tried to get onto the islands. There was things about there was a great show we did about arbutus trees, which is, I guess that's kind of West Coast. I'm trying to think of if they're anywhere else. I don't know what the thing is with arbutus. I've heard that they have to be close to the ocean or whatever, and they're hard to transplant. But we did a neat little show about that with, I believe, David Suzuki acting in it, which was kind of cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
What part did David Suzuki play?
I think David Suzuki played David Suzuki.
Okay.
Earlier, actually, we did a show to show a little on how Japanese fishermen were their boats were confiscated during the war, and David's dad acted in that episode and did a great job. Carl, I believe his name was. I may be wrong,
wow.
But it was
okay.
Very cool. So that, you know, that was neat. It was neat that, I didn't know it at the time, that we were really ahead of the curve on those things. Shows about, obviously, First Nations, which I was extremely proud of, which I think right now on television, there's no shows about, of course, they have a network now that maybe there's some interesting shows going on, but on mainstream television, you know, we've kind of forgot about the First Nations. I'm sure there'll be a new series out of Vancouver about golf or something, you know. So yeah, I said that to... never mind.
Okay.
We can fix that one out.
All right. Any other thoughts on how the beachcomers sort of spread the image of BC around the world? How it defined...
Well, you know...
Us.
I think it... People ask, why did that show go on for so long? First of all, it really was kind of harmless. It was an interesting show that it played Gibsons for Gibsons, BC for BC. I mean, we're in an industry now in British Columbia where the indigenous part of it is probably only, 250 million out of the billion is Canadian shows, and we played that. We weren't ashamed to show Canadian money or do things like that, which I think is interesting. I think we were a small town, and somehow small towns shows seem to work well in Canada, whether the Corner Gas or Anna Green Gables, whatever it is. There is something about a small town that plays a bit more Canada, which is interesting. I think the other parts of the world loved it for the scenery. They couldn't believe that this gorgeous place was there. You know, television at that particular time, you know, in the 70s and 80s, a foreign television would be maybe something from Australia. We knew American shows. You know, American shows were either westerns or you know, someone being shot, or a sitcom, which was inside. So it was very rare that you got a chance to get outside and see the beauty of an area. And the neat thing about, you know, I still go over to Gibson's occasionally, is that Lower Gibson's hasn't changed much. But I think which is I think a godsend. I think we're very, very lucky about that. There's no franchise. You know, Starbucks is up. Tim Hortons are up the top of the hill. Downstairs, it's down in the Lower Gibson's. It's still a very cool place, and you know, not all that far. And that shocked the number of people, even from the Lower Mainland, that have never been to Gibson's.
Now, you took a shot at keeping the Beachcombers alive.
Yeah. I think the pitch was to CBC, the new Beachcombers with Dave Thomas as Molly.
Okay.
But the idea that I, at that time, I said, you know, I think Canada is ready for a kind of a family show, a show that you could sit down and watch with your kids or your grandchildren or whatever, not be embarrassed about it. I mean, sure, it's a different world. You know, when Beachcombers was on in the 70s and certainly early 80s, you know, people had one TV. So you had to work it out as a family. But and that was good, I think. Nowadays, you know, I mean, there was four of us in our house and we had five TVs. Go figure it. We'd still argue. But I thought that there was an opportunity to do a show again about Gibson's. That way, and actually, you know, I take marketing. I love marketing. It made sense to me that we had millions. We're talking 19 years where we probably averaged 1.5 million an episode. So, and yet some years it was 2 million, some maybe 1 million or whatever. But still, over that period of time, millions and millions of people watched it. So where is that audience now? Could you not massage and get that audience again? Why could you? So then you have these kids who watch it. Now they've grown up. They have their own kids that they want to share a show with. And we did well. I mean, their highest rated movie of the week that particular fall on CBC when it ran. I didn't want to do movies of the week. I wanted to do a series. CBC at that time were into special events, they called them. They wanted to have a special event movie, and it was a Beachcomber reunion. Then it was a Beachcomber Christmas, and then, you know, a hockey thing. I think we could have done far better with a series, but they don't let me run stations or studios. So, and it was. And the neat thing for me on the whole thing, which we didn't have the first time, was the internet. I get two or three emails a day. And now you have to struggle to find Beachcombers or a site. There is no real site on it. We did a site for our movie. There's this great site called TV Archives Canada. For anyone who's a fan of Canadian television, this guy out of Winnipeg started on his own, did this great website. I mean, Ty, same. I mean, that's how I got hooked into the site there. It's so neat that you can get information and stories you don't get from mainstream, you know, the press, which is cool, and it gets a chance for writers to write.
Okay. All right. How do you feel about trees?
I'm a big fan of trees. I grew up in Alberta. Yes, we didn't have a lot of trees. I had great relationships with trees. I was back home, actually. I was back home at a small Wetaskiwin, and we walked by the park, and I remember I had this tree that I used to kind of hang out, and for some reason, it was an evergreen, and some parts of it had died, so I could actually climb up in it, and it was like a little turret, a little castle that I could look out. And as a kid, I used to be my favorite tree. I'd go kind of sit up there and look out. Look, I had a picture window out of a tree. At the time, it seemed huge. I'm sure the thing was like 10 feet tall, but I think we all relate. I guess everyone who comes from an area with trees certainly relates to them. We had a place in the North Shore in West Van that had a really kind of it was up high on the hill, so that we were above the treetops. And I remember when it would snow, that would be very cool because it looked, you'd feel like you were on top of the world. No, it's, you know, I haven't dated one, but I certainly appreciate them.
Okay. And I've been asking everybody else this. I know what you'd do if you ran the CBC or ran Ministry of Culture. But do you have any profound thoughts on what you'd do if somebody said, hey, run the forests?
Well, you know, I don't know a lot about it. I guess in my my naivete, I've always wondered, obviously it has to be sustainable. Actually, I was thinking about that the other day, thinking about bamboo, thinking, you know, how with the, everyone's putting bamboo in floors because I guess the turnaround is a lot faster in bamboo. I'm thinking, I wonder if we can grow a lot of bamboo. I had bamboo at one place we had, and it took over the thing. But obviously, it should be. You got to look upon it as renewable. If you don't, I mean, it's a huge industry, and you completely destroyed it. I would think, I have the same feeling about if obviously, you know. The lumber industry, I have the same feeling about that I do about the Canadian film industry. I think you should add value to it. I mean, I'm a little upset with us just being workers for, you know, the big multinationals that come in and shoot here. I would far rather own our industry and export our talent. And probably the same with the lumber industry. Probably being able to just add value to the lumber industry makes sense at all. You just don't ship raw logs off. You probably should be shipping off, if you're going to do anything, you ship off, you know, use the artists. And there's some great artists who do some wonderful things with wood. Bruno loved, actually, you know what? Bruno loved wood. And he was always into carving. And actually, just before he passed away, someone from the First Nations gave him this huge, big, wonderful piece of cedar that he actually built a little house, because he'd had this incredible wooden boat that he used to use, and he moved that out, put it in this wonderful little shed, his little right beside his house up at Gibson's, and was going to do some carving in it. He used to love carving. Yeah, that's a bit interesting hook, isn't it?
Very cool. Thank you very much.
That was Jackson Davies on the Green Chain Podcast. For the Tai'i, I'm Mark Laren-Young.